All right, so we love it when you send in stuff for us to check out, and this batch that you sent in is all about how our bodies kind of deal with all the demands life throws at us, right?
Yeah.
And it looks like the ANS, the autonomic nervous system, that pops up a lot. Like that's the behind the scenes control center helping us like adapt to all that stress and kind of stay balanced.
Yeah, exactly. And kind of building on that, one of the things that that I found really fascinating was this concept of pelvic torsion, which is often Beckenvoering in the German sources here. And when we hear torsion, you might think, bones are way out of place, but it's really more subtle, more like a signal. Think of it as the body's way of showing us that something might be a little off kilter with the ANS, in response to everything going on in our lives.
Okay, so like pelvic torsion, it's not just like a wonky pelvis just kind of hanging out there on its own. It's more of a sign that the ANS might be like struggling to keep things in check. Okay, so in this deep dive, we're gonna like unpack what this pelvic torsion actually looks like in the body, like what might be causing it according to your sources,
Yeah.
and most importantly, what can we do about it?
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
What can we do?
So to start, let's look at the actual mechanics of pelvic torsion, like what's actually happening in the body. So the material you've provided describes a common pattern where one side of the pelvis, usually the left iliac bone, is rotated forward a little bit. And often that's accompanied by tightening in the muscles on that same side, especially the iliopsoas muscle.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, it's a big one. It connects the torso and legs, helps with hip flexion, and it's really sensitive to stress, And then on the opposite side, the right iliac bone tends to rotate backward, and that seems to be linked with tension in those muscles along the back of the leg, like the adductors.
Those are the inner thigh muscles, right?
Those are the ones. Yeah. And what's really interesting here is that this little shift in the pelvis, it can create this kind of spiral effect all the way up the spine. And it can even lead to what's called a functional leg length discrepancy, where one leg might appear shorter, even though the bones are actually the same length. It's like that little twist at the base is messing with the whole structure.
Wow. So it's not just a local thing down there in the pelvis. We're talking like potential whole body effects here.
Absolutely. Yeah. The material you sent talks about a whole range of issues it could contribute to.
Like what?
Well, orthopedically speaking, there's headaches and neck pain, sometimes even dizziness, vision problems, and tinnitus, that ringing in the ears you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then pain in the shoulders and arms, tightness in the chest, heart rhythm disturbances, even discomfort in the abdomen, both upper and lower.
Oh, wow. So it's like that pelvic imbalance can like trigger this domino effect of problems throughout the body.
Yeah, because everything's connected through the nervous system and that fascial network. Think of it like a kink in a hose, it affects the water pressure everywhere.
Right. Yeah, I got that.
So yeah, it's not just a local issue, it's a whole body thing. And another thing it talks about is like morning stiffness or pain that, tends to get worse after sitting for a
Oh,
while,
yeah.
but then maybe eases up a bit with movement and warmth, but then comes back or gets worse with things like slouching or prolonged sitting or standing, bending over a lot, heavy
Oh my
lifting.
God, that's me like every morning.
Yeah,
Right.
right. It's pretty common. And it's interesting how these symptoms can show up differently depending on age, too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So the sources point out that in children, you might see less of the typical muscle and joint complaints
Right.
and more in the area of, mental and behavioral things. Some sources even connect it to things like ADHD.
Oh wow, that's a really interesting link to consider.
Yeah, definitely something to think about. And then for teenagers, going through those growth spurts, the material highlights chronic back pain and headaches as pretty common issues potentially linked to the stress of growing so fast, or even things like orthodontic work.
Braces and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, braces, headgear, all of that, which can sometimes lead to a shortening of those key hip and knee flexor muscles. It really highlights how interconnected everything is.
Yeah, it really does. And it goes even deeper than that, too, like into these vegetative symptoms, the stuff controlled by that ANS we were talking about.
Oh, yeah, especially the vagus nerve.
The vagus nerve, yeah.
Yeah, when that gets out of whack because of stress, it can manifest in all kinds of ways: nausea, stomach pain, heart palpitations, low blood pressure, dizziness, headaches, anxiety, depression, trouble concentrating, sleep problems, even a decreased libido.
Wow, it's like what seems like a mechanical thing in the pelvis
Yeah.
is actually messing with like all these systems in the body.
It's wild, right? And the vagus nerve is like the body's main communication highway between the brain and a lot of these organs. So when it's disrupted by stress, it can lead to this cascade of issues.
Okay, so now we're getting a clearer picture of what pelvic torsion is and like how widespread its impact can be.
Right.
So let's dive into the why, like what's actually happening in the body to cause this.
Okay, so the material explains that a temporary pelvic torsion actually makes sense from an evolutionary perspective.
Really?
Yeah, think about our ancestors needing to react quickly to danger.
Okay, yeah.
That slight twist in the pelvis might give them a little more spring, you know, like a readiness for that fight or flight response.
Okay.
The key, though, is that after that burst of activity, the body and mind would ideally go back to a relaxed state.
Right.
The pelvis would realign naturally.
Okay.
But the problem is, you know, in our modern world, those stress hormones don't always have a chance to dissipate.
Right. We're not like running from saber-toothed tigers anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. We might not have that physical release, or we just don't give ourselves enough time and space to truly unwind. And that's when this temporary helpful torsion can become more persistent.
Right. And it becomes a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And this persistent state, it really involves a whole network of muscles and those fascial tissues connecting them.
Okay.
So the iliopsoas that we talked about earlier is really central here.
Yep.
Some of the material even refers to it as our emotional muscle or our fight or flight muscle.
Hmm.
And there's this potential connection they point out between stress in the right emotional hemisphere of the brain and tension in the left iliopsoas.
Huh.
Yeah. And then there's the quadratus lumborum in the lower back,
okay,
which they link to the adrenal glands and their release of stress hormones.
So like adrenaline and cortisol and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not just these individual muscles working in isolation. It's that whole myofascial chain, that web of connective tissue that runs throughout the entire body that includes the adductors, glutes, piriformis, hamstrings. It's all interconnected.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And this brings us to this really interesting concept of trigger points, or what they call Störherde in the German material.
Störherde. Okay.
Yeah. These are those hyperirritable spots in muscles that can cause pain, you know, either locally or referred pain elsewhere in the body.
Right. Yeah.
And what they suggest is that if you have tension in the hip or shoulder muscles, and it seems to lessen or resolve when you touch or do some energetic release on other areas like the navel or scars, that can be a big clue that there's ANS stress involved.
So like a purely physical tension could actually be connected to these energetic disturbances and the body's overall stress response.
Exactly.
Okay, so what happens if we keep ignoring these little warning signs?
Well, if we're constantly pushing ourselves and not paying attention to those subtle cues, the sources say that even small awkward movements can eventually lead to a blockage in the sacroiliac joint, the SI joint.
Okay.
And what's really fascinating is that this mechanical issue in the pelvis can then negatively impact our mood.
Really?
Yeah, because it's connected to the limbic system in the midbrain.
Oh, wow. So it's like this vicious cycle.
It is. Yeah. They call it the stress spiral.
The stress spiral.
Yeah. It goes like this. You have excessive physical or psychological stress. It overloads the ANS, leads to this dysregulation where we're kind of stuck in the on position.
Right.
Then you get that asymmetrical tension in the fascia and the pelvic torsion, potentially leading to those SI joint and even atlas blockages.
The atlas is like the top vertebra, right?
The top vertebra, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all this limits our resilience both physically and mentally, causing chronic pain fatigue and just generating more stress for the ANS and our mental state.
Sort of a scary picture.
It is. Yeah, it's a lot to think about.
Yeah, so a lot of people are familiar with the idea of muscle imbalances causing problems.
Right.
But your sources highlight this other less obvious factor.
Yeah, these Störherde focal disturbances and Felder interference fields.
Interference field.
Yeah, think of them like static on a radio signal.
Okay.
Disrupting the body's normal communication.
Right.
They can be lingering effects from physical or emotional traumas, past illnesses, surgeries, anything that's put a strain on the system.
So it's not just about stretching those tight hamstrings. We need to look at these deeper underlying issues.
Exactly. And the cool thing is the material actually gives us some ways to become more aware of our own potential pelvic torsion.
Okay, yeah, let's get practical. What can we actually do at home?
Right. So one test is the hip flexor test. Lie down on your back, bring one knee towards your chest, pulling it in with your hands, and watch what happens to the other leg, the one that's supposed to stay straight. If it lifts off the table or bed, it could mean there's a shortening in the hip flexor on that side, usually left side.
Okay. So far, so good.
All right. Another one involves checking the range of motion in your hips.
Okay.
So lie on your back with your hips and knees, bent feet flat on the surface about hip width apart.
Okay.
And then just let both knees fall outward towards the floor.
Okay.
You can put your hands on your pelvis to stabilize it.
Uh-huh.
And see if there's a difference in how far each knee drops.
Mm.
A reduced outward movement, often on the right side, could mean there's tension in the hip adductors.
Okay, so those are some simple physical checks, but the material also talks about this integral stress test.
Right, that's where it gets really interesting.
What is that?
So the navel and stress reflex. This involves gently touching your navel, the front of your neck, any scars you have or places where you feel pain or discomfort in joints or organs.
Hmm.
And the key is to see if the pelvic torsion lessens or even resolves when you do this.
Interesting.
Yeah. If it does, the theory is that it shows a direct link between that area and your overall stress state.
So like a simple touch can give us insight into how the ANS is involved.
Exactly.
What if the touch doesn't seem to make a difference?
If that happens, they suggest looking for a broader, often energetic interference field, what they call the aura reflex.
The aura reflex.
Yeah. This involves holding your hand at arm's length over the suspected area.
Okay.
And seeing if the pelvis relaxes even without touching it.
Huh.
If you notice a relaxation when your hand's there and then the torsion comes back when you move it away. It suggests there might be an energetic interference field at play.
So it's like our bodies are sensitive to these energy fields, even if we don't realize it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And they mentioned some practical considerations too, right?
Oh, yeah, like taking off jewelry, especially navel piercings, right. And even thinking about things like bite splints and how they might be affecting things.
Interesting.
Yeah, these little things can sometimes act as stressors or interference fields.
Right.
And they give a list of common areas to explore with this touch and observe approach.
Okay, like what?
Well, the front of the neck, for one, thinking about the tonsils, the thyroid gland, and the vagus nerve itself.
Okay.
Then the flank area on your sides that relates to the adrenals, kidneys, solar plexus, and the vagus nerve plexus.
Uh-huh.
And then the upper abdomen, thinking about the solar plexus, diaphragm, abdominal, and back, fascia quadratus, lumborum muscle, 12th rib, and the SI joint.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is, yeah.
And they specifically mentioned scars, too.
Oh, yeah, all scars, even ones that seem minor or from a long time ago, like wisdom teeth removal, nasal septum surgery, episiotomies,
Hi.
Deeper surgical scars, anything can act as these focal points of disturbance.
It's crazy to think that something that feels like it's healed could still be affecting us.
I know, right? It's pretty wild. And they even say that for deep scars, you can sometimes test them just by focusing your attention on them.
Or just by thinking about them.
Exactly.
Yeah, they list other areas too, right?
Yeah, they list the eyes and key joints like the jaw, the allanto-occipital joint at the top of the neck,
okay.
The upper ribs, SI joint, again, cossystechs, and even the joints in the feet.
So we're talking tangible physical influences in these more subtle energetic aspects.
Right. It's a whole body approach.
Now, what if during that hip abduction test where the knees fall out, one side is still restricted even after trying these stress tests?
Okay. In that case, they suggest thinking about the possibility of an actual irritation in the SI joint itself or the pubic bone. They also mention hip osteoarthritis if there are other limitations in the hip's range of motion.
Uh-huh.
So in those cases, it might be better to do the test sitting or even standing to see if the restriction changes.
So it's all about paying attention to those subtle cues.
It is, yeah. And they even draw a parallel to tension in the shoulder muscles.
Okay.
Particularly the shoulder abductors as another place where stress can show up. And they mention that dentists sometimes use these principles to test the effectiveness of bite splints, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a really practical application.
It is. All right, so now that we've explored how to identify pelvic torsion and some of the underlying stressors, let's talk about what we can do about it.
Okay, this is the part I've been waiting for. What can we actually do?
Okay, so one technique is called navel integration.
Navel integration.
Yeah, it involves placing one hand gently on your abdomen.
Okay.
And then using the middle finger of that hand to very gently move your navel in different directions.
Mm.
The idea is to feel for the direction that feels most free with the least resistance, maybe even the direction that helps you take a deeper breath.
Mm.
And while you're doing that, the other hand can be placed gently on the front of your neck with your forearm resting over your heart.
Okay.
This is sometimes called the front neck grip.
Okay.
But they do say if that feels uncomfortable or constricting at all, it might mean you need to address any energetic imbalances in that neck and heart area first.
Like that feeling of having a thick neck.
Exactly. Yeah. Or feeling like you might burst a collar.
Yeah, I've felt that.
Yeah, and as an alternative for that second hand, you can try placing it on your flank.
My flank, right?
Yeah, on those deep lumbar muscles in your lower back, the broad back fascia, and the area of your kidneys and adrenals,
Okay.
especially if that kidney region tends to feel cold or sensitive to cold.
So like a gentle way of communicating with your body.
It is, yeah, very gentle.
Okay, what's next?
The next technique is scar integration.
Scar integration.
Yeah, this one you use your fingertips to very gently touch and move a scar that you think might be causing a disturbance.
Okay.
And again, move it in the direction that feels most comfortable and soft. And while you're doing that, your other hand rests on your navel.
Okay.
For larger scars, they suggest working on them gradually, maybe just a small section at a time.
Okay.
And they even mention that a partner or therapist could help by working on a scar while you maintain the navel integration.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, or even work on a different scar simultaneously.
Okay.
And they also mention using a laser pointer.
Really?
Yeah, a simple red laser pointer shining it on the scar.
Okay.
It can sometimes help soften the tissues beforehand or be used intermittently during the scar integration.
Yeah.
And for those deeper scars, like after a tonsillectomy or a C-section,
Yeah.
the technique involves shifting your focus inward to the depth of the scar tissue
Okay.
and visualizing a gentle movement in that yielding direction.
So we're engaging with the body on multiple levels here.
We are. Yeah, physical touch, energetic awareness, even the power of intention.
Okay, and what about those aura or energy fields we talk about? How can we work on releasing those?
All right, so for aura release, especially for those energy fields around your neck and abdominal areas,
Okay.
the suggestion is to either stand or lie down comfortably and hold both hands wide apart, first in front of your abdomen and then in front of your neck, like you're holding this big invisible cloud.
My stress
Your
cloud.
stress cloud, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And the idea is to move your hands until you feel a subtle change in the air between them.
Like what?
Maybe a slight resistance or a feeling of density if you're standing or sitting,
Okay.
or if you're lying down. Maybe it's just outside the point where you sense a slightly unpleasant atmosphere or your arms start to feel heavy.
Interesting.
Yeah, and once you find that boundary, you just hold your hands there and wait until that stress cloud seems to dissipate or soften.
Okay.
You might notice deeper breathing, muscle relaxation, even emotions coming up and releasing.
So we're sensing the edges of this energy field and then letting it go.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
they point out that scars and other areas that have experienced trauma or prolonged stress can also have these blocked energy fields,
Right.
and you can test for it the same way you do the general aura release.
Okay.
Your pelvis might relax when you hold your hand at that specific distance where you first sense the energy field around that area. And they mentioned some typical areas where unprocessed emotions might be held.
Like where?
The jaw, eyes, the atlanto-occipital joint, the rib attachments near the heart, and the coccyx.
Wow, so many places.
I know, right? And they also say that the size or intensity of your stress field can sometimes correlate with how stressed you're feeling overall.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and if the aura release doesn't seem to do anything, it could mean there isn't a significant field there at that time,
Okay.
or that the field is bigger than your arm span. In those cases, they suggest getting help from a partner or using visualization
So
techniques.
we've got options.
We do, yeah, and they also touch on this orthobiognomic self-care for the joints.
Orthobiognomy, what is that?
It's a very gentle, movement-based approach that focuses on finding the body's preferred directions of movement.
Okay.
So for the pubic symphysis, it's about subtly feeling for the direction of easiest movement and gently encouraging that.
Okay.
For the hip flexors and thigh muscles, one suggestion is to put your calf on your opposite knee and then gently draw your knee towards your hip. Again, feeling for that ease of movement.
Okay.
And for the SI joint, the key is to find the easy direction that reduces pressure or pain and gently facilitate that movement.
So we're working with the body's natural tendencies.
Exactly.
And then there's pain zone integration.
Yes, once your pelvis feels more relaxed
Yeah.
and you've addressed any key joints and muscles using orthobiognomy or other gentle techniques,
Right.
you can then bring your other hand to an area of specific tension or pain while still maintaining that navel integration connection. So, depending on the area, this might involve gently holding a joint in a comfortable position,
Okay.
lightly massaging muscles, or applying gentle pressure to trigger points.
So it's a holistic approach, starting with the pelvic balance and then moving outward.
Exactly.
And they emphasize that the initial pelvic relaxation might be temporary.
Right. It makes sense because the ANS is still learning to regulate itself better.
Right.
So it's important to give your body time to react after each step.
Okay.
And to be aware that emotions might come up as tension releases.
Uh-huh.
The initial focus should be on identifying and releasing as many of those ANS stressors as possible.
Okay.
And they caution that if those deeper disturbances aren't addressed, you might see your symptoms worsen temporarily,
yeah,
or the relief might be short-lived.
So it's a process that takes patience and consistency.
It is, yeah. And what about long-term maintenance?
Yeah, what do they recommend for incorporating these techniques into our daily lives?
For ongoing support, they recommend doing things like the aura release, navel neck integration, and the flank grip every day, along with occasional scar work as needed, maybe using the laser pointer if it helps.
Uh-huh.
Good times to do this. These are before bed and before and after exercise sports or yoga.
Okay.
And they mention there might be a simplified video guide available for self-treatment, although they don't give a link in the material you sent.
This has been a really eye-opening deep dive.
It has, yeah.
The big takeaway seems to be that pelvic torsion is so much more than just a misaligned pelvis.
Right.
It's a sign of our overall stress response and how well our ANS is working.
Exactly.
And it can affect our physical and emotional well-being in so many ways.
It really can, yeah.
By understanding these connections and trying these self-assessment and self-integration techniques,
yeah,
we can start to understand our own tension patterns and help our bodies find balance.
Absolutely.
This feels like a starting point for a deeper exploration.
It is.
It encourages us to pay attention to our body's signals and to consider those hidden sources of stress.
Yeah, and that brings us to our final thought for you to ponder.
Okay, hit us with it.
Could those seemingly unrelated aches, pains, or feelings of unease you experience be connected to this interplay between your nervous system and your body's alignment?
Mm-hmm.
And what might shift for you if you start exploring these connections more consciously?
That's something to think about for sure.
It is.
Thanks for this deep dive. It's been amazing.
My pleasure.
All right, we'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.